Wentworth Falls is the name of a waterfall and a small town near the waterfall in the Blue Mountains region of New South Wales. It is 2.5 hours from Sydney's inner city and then another 30-minute walk to get to the top of the waterfall. When you are up there, you can see the spectacular nature and the mountain range that makes up the border of Sydney. Sydney keeps growing west and expanding with new suburbs, but at some point it will reach the Blue Mountains and Sydney will have to stop. But until the suburbs spread that far, the Blue Mountains will remain one of the more popular tourist attractions for visitors of Sydney, with its spectacular view of nature. And Wentworth Falls is one of those places they tell you that you must go and see when you're there. We've met Stevie Plunder before. He appeared in our episode about Half a Cow, and he was in a band called The Plunderers with Nick Dalton. His real name was Anthony Hayes, but he was Stevie Plunder. After The Plunderers, Stevie formed The Whitlams with Andy Lewis and Tim Friedman. Stevie and his fellow Hayes brothers from Canberra were all involved in bands in Sydney. I've never met Stevie, but I have met some of his brothers. And when I look at photos of Stevie's, I see him in the face of those brothers. There's no mistaking his family line. I never met him, but I know a bit about Stevie. Because every so often, drinking with men older than myself, they happily tell me about the days that I missed. And before long, there would be a Stevie story. The last Stevie story goes like this. It was Australia Day on the 26th of January 1996. But if you're a musician or a music fan in Sydney, Australia Day means the big day out. And that's where everyone was when Stevie wandered around the streets of Newtown looking for someone to talk to. Not finding anyone, he stopped for a beer at the Newtown Town Hall. That pub looks over the train tracks of Newtown train station. Stevie then took the 2.5 hour train ride to Wentworth Falls, and then the 30-minute walk to the top of the waterfall. Later, his body was found at the bottom of the waterfall. I don't know, and no one knows, what really happened to Stevie Plunder. We can only speculate. But Stevie was what I would call a big liver of life. He reached big emotional highs and bounced to big lows. There was speculation that it was suicide, but 3-something hours to get there is a tough timeline for suicide and to keep your resolve. But that said, depression doesn't make sense if you're caught up in it. There have been many accidents at Wentworth Falls. Every few years, a tourist loses their footing or nature takes over. 2 people died in 2022 alone. But that doesn't explain what Stevie was doing there in the first place. In the end, we simply don't know. But Stevie's death hit the Sydney music scene hard. And in particular, it changed everything for the band that he was in, the Whitlams. Tim Friedman would go from a keyboard player in a fun bar band to the voice and writer of some of the most beautiful songs of the decade. But he would do so through intense grief and drama. But spoilers, he'd managed to survive it all. Welcome to Just Ace, a podcast about the 90s Australian alternative music scene, whatever the hell that means. And this week, we look at the Whitlams. The Whitlams were actually born on Australia Day, 4 years earlier from the day that Stevie Plunder died. Both Tim Friedman, a keyboard player from the Sydney scene who had played in lots of bands, and Stevie Plunder were at the very first big day out in 1992. Whilst everyone else was inside watching Nirvana, they hatched a plan to form a band. Both men would be songwriters and singers. The original bass player was Andy Lewis, who played in The Plunderers with Stevie. They took their name from the controversial and pioneering Australian Prime Minister Gough Whitlam, who was instrumental in starting what would be Triple J and kicking off all this alternative nonsense in the first place. Stevie went to the same high school as Gough in Canberra. So that's how the Whitlams started. But really, the band had little ambition other than to be a pub band. They played around Sydney's Inner West, a hip part of Sydney near Sydney University. Their first album was 1993's Introducing the Whitlams, a ramshackle but fun affair with live tracks, studio tracks and covers. It doesn't even hit 30 minutes of running time. It's not the deepest record you've ever heard, but it is silly fun. The highlight is the extremely referential song named Gough. The film clip featured historic footage of Gough Whitlam and then footage of the band hanging out on Newtown's King Street. Here's Gough by the Whitlams from their debut album, Introducing the Whitlams.
song about a man called Garth and a little boy who wanted to be tarred with the same brush. He learned Latin, held his head up high, and he hated the liberals, though he didn't know why. There were reasons.
How long have you got?
There are always reasons.
How long have you got?
Little boy is on the stage tonight. His name is Anthony Hayes, and he's doing all right. They both went to the same local Canberra school. Stevie was 1972. What a party.
A big day for both of us.
Big reason to party.
A big day for both of us.
I come home to dinner with me. We'll play chess and drink claret. Walk slowly down my little street. Yeah, you bring Margaret.
Stuart Eadie of the Clouds had joined on drums shortly after, and there's a story that they got the bus from the film Priscilla, Queen of the Desert as their tour bus. They played hundreds of pubs that would have them. It's kind of what they were built for. Set them up in a corner and they'll entertain you. They followed it up with a second album called Undeniably the Whitlams in 1995. It was a much better record than their debut, although some of it was still very silly. There were fun drinking songs and story songs. There's a cover of If I Only Had a Brain from The Wizard of Oz. Again, Tim and Stevie split the songwriting. But there's more to the album. There's the wonderfully sly Randy Newman-y You Don't Even Know My Name, written by Stevie. It's a lovely song about the oddness of having some musician that you love and see a lot, and how one-sided that relationship is. It also showed that they were already capable of the gentle, thoughtful ballads that they would later master. Here's You Don't Even Know My Name by the Whitlams.
I've been watching you for so long now. You know I feel just a little ashamed. You know I follow you wherever you go, hoping one day things might change. Maybe someday you will notice me, and this won't be just a game.
But another song from the album, I Make Hamburgers, was a hit on Triple J and released as a commercial single. It was a fun little novelty, and the first song that I ever heard by the band. It's another unreliable narrator song. It was written and sung by Tim. Here's I Make Hamburgers by the Whitlams.
My first customer was Megan. She came in for a hamburger with a lot, no meat. Hey, that's a salad roll, I said, and we started going out. My second customer was Susan. She came in for Diet Pepsi morning tea each day, and I said, you don't need to be on a diet. Wanna come out tonight? I said, our prim gringo, he's got a lot of money, and he'll take us to the bars where they got a few. He'll buy us those beers. They give it to you in bottles, and we land them on the top, and it don't taste too bad. I'm telling you, telling you. My third customer was Maria.
I Make Hamburgers is a good time, somewhat smart-assy song by a decent live band in Australia. With that background, it had a good chance of being a minor hit on Triple J. It wasn't stylistically far away from contemporary bands like Custard and the Fauves, except it had piano. I Make Hamburgers made number 79 in the Triple J Hottest 100 of 1996. That achievement was announced on the same day that Stevie Plunder took that final train ride to Wentworth Falls. Those first two Whitlams albums feel like a different band, but undeniably has several key songs that the band still plays live. But this first lineup of the Whitlams was small time. They sold a couple of thousand copies of their albums. I Make Hamburgers was a bit of a foothold on something, but it wasn't like the Whitlams were on the brink of success. But of course, Stevie's death changed everything. The Whitlams were actually booked in to start recording a third album 2 days after Stevie died. All sessions were cancelled, of course. By then, bass player Andy Lewis had also left and moved to Melbourne. With only Tim left, it looked like the Whitlams were no more, At least the Whitlams just became Tim. Born and raised in Sydney, Tim was one of those people everyone claimed to have known for years, especially after he became famous. And it was probably true, because Tim had been around. He'd played in lots of bands as a keyboard player, filling in here and there for bands like the Hummingbirds, the Sunny Boys, and plenty more. He had his own bands too, like Itchy Feet, a ska band, and Olive Branch, a band that he formed with his brother. He would later re-record an Olive Branch song, Life's a Beach, on his breakthrough album with the Whitlams. More than that, he was just around at gigs and at the pub. And all that time, he was observing everyone. If Tim has a superpower, it is for observation. In the Whitlams' early days, Tim was the reliable straight man compared to Stevie. But it was just because Stevie cast such a large shadow, because Tim was just as temperamental an artist and a talented consumer of alcohol. But his instincts as a songwriter was more orderly and more on the side of craft. He loved his knees up pub classics, sure, but he also had a huge affection for 70s singer-songwriters. Some months after Stevie's death, over the course of 1996 and 1997, Tim started writing and recording again. Some of the songs were about Stevie, but others were about other friends than people he knew. He wrote about his local area of Sydney, and he wrote about women and relationships. But he didn't have a band. He asked different musicians to help on different songs. Andy Lewis returned to play bass, but only for the album. For most things, Tim called on friends and talented players like Chris Abrahams on piano or harmonica, indie string quartet 4Play on strings, and a succession of guitarists including Bernie Hayes and Matt Galvin. Another guitar player was Tim Hall, the frontman of a local band called The Strange. That band had broke up and Tim Friedman asked Tim Hall to join the band. The idea was to continue the Whitlams as a two frontman band, but that didn't work out. The two frontman show worked live, but the recordings that they were making were more deeply personal, and the focus was falling on Tim Friedman. Tim Hall felt sidelined, and he only contributed one original song on the finished album, as well as a cover of Bob Dylan's Tangled Up in Blue. He left the band before the album came out. All in all, over 20 musicians played on the finished album, but producer Rob Taylor was the constant for the sessions scattered throughout that time. Taylor had worked on the other two Whitlams albums to date as well. The scattered sessions were held in many places, professional studios, or on a cheap 8-track recorded at Tim's home, and even a makeshift setup above a Mexican restaurant. The whole thing cost $20,000, which was very little at the time. The album was released in September 1997, and it was called Eternal Nightcap. The song that opened the album was called No Aphrodisiac. It is a beautiful, escalating ballad about frustration, loneliness, and neediness. It was based on a real cassette letter, a song that Tim taped for a woman whilst people were asleep upstairs. The song cuts deeply to the bone almost immediately, and it ended with a fascinating rant about sexual desires found in want ads. And that last bit was written by Tim's friends, Pinky and Chit Chat, from a new band called Machine Gun Fellatio, who would see greater success in the next decade. The result was a song that was far from the good time drinking songs that the Whitlams were known for, but it was immediately arresting. Here's No Aphrodisiac by the Whitlams.
A letter to you on a cassette, 'cause we don't write anymore. Gotta make it up quickly. There's people asleep on the second floor. There's no aphrodisiac like loneliness. Truth, beauty, and a picture of you. You'll be walking your dog in a
I'm not sure I knew the word aphrodisiac when I was 16 and I first heard this song, but that was thematically true for the whole album. This was more sophisticated and messy than, say, Being a Prisoner of Society or Polyester Girls. Once again, we were very far away from Kelly Street, people. Over the decades, I've had the displeasure to try out software that can predict a hit song. Some tech startup has analyzed music, and so some radio station could run all the new releases through these programs, and it can tell you if it will be a hit to their audience. If the thought of that makes you sick, you're not alone. But I don't know if any algorithm could predict No Aphrodisiac. It just doesn't make sense as a hit song. It's also a really tough song to cover, as it's so personal and intimate. Anything too arranged takes away from the song. It should sound cheap and tossed off. It's a beautiful song that is subverted and messed up. Australian hip-hop group Horror Show did a wonderful cover which added to the scattered improvised feel that comes with hip-hop. And then John Farnham covered the song in 2005, and it's fun hearing him sing that ending.
Letter to you on the cassette. You shouldn't leave me alone. No. 40, shaved, sexy, wants to do it all day. With a gun-toting, trigger-happy tranny named Kinky Renee. And a tired teacher, 28 seats, regular means for masculine, muscular, nappy, clad, brutal breeding, while his wife rough frazzles with a puppy all a quiver on a wine-soaked, strobing, Asiatic heart of mirrors.
The heart of the Eternal Nightcap album was a bunch of songs called Charlie. Charlie number 1, Charlie number 2, and Charlie number 3 don't appear in order on the album, but are scattered throughout the album. All three were portraits of male friendship and the odd distance you have even with your closest friends and the helplessness of seeing them and their faults. They were set to beautiful piano melodies and filled with a novelist's eye for detail. Charlie number 2 also had the title of Buy Now, Pay Later. Triple J had started playing it, this gentle piano ballad that Tim had wrote. This is a radio song. On the surface, it's a song about a friend on heroin. But it's so much more and features so many great lyrical details. A few months later, after the album had been a success, Tim said it was weird to see grown men hugging and holding each other in the crowd when he performed this song. This song was so personal, had become universal on the back of some radio play. Here's Buy Now, Pay Later, or Charlie No. 2 by the Whitlams.
Charlie, you're not my Charlie anymore, you're screwing it up. You're killing your soul with an audience looking on. If I hadn't left early last night, I would have made a speech to you. You're not the only one you're going to hurt. If you don't believe me, I don't believe in you. If you don't believe me, I don't believe in you. Makes it all feel better, does it? And makes you feel like heaven, does it? You loved it and you spent accordingly. You can't afford it now. You can't afford it now. You can't afford it now. You try and you fail. And love it like a little dog. And feed it on the scraps you find. And kiss it while you're still asleep. You buy now and pay later.
The Charlie songs, everyone assumed, were about Stevie. Tim has said that this isn't true, and that Charlie, the name, was taken from Charlie Owen. Only Charlie number 3 is about Stevie. I think that might be literally true, but Tim was writing about his life, and it's hard to imagine that emotionally, Stevie's death didn't put Tim in a place where these songs emerged. But it wasn't all ballads. There's a couple of fun pub rockers, including the first single, You Sound Like Louis Burdett. Louis Burdett was a jazz drummer who was in the Whitlams for a bit. He was also Tim's housemate and they lived together in a house in Tempe between the Tip and the airport. The song captures that spirit of living in a share house in your 20s near the city. Here's You Sound Like Louis Burdett by the Whitlams.
Had a little bit to drink. Yeah, there's a little thing I wanted to do out east, yeah. I'm nothing too emotional, my good miss. I couldn't be serious in a room full of jackknife eyes. Stop talking about the years. You sound like Louis Burdett. And we roll on in my back shed. Play some poker, scratch my head. Look at the sky and spot the planes. Where would I go on holiday? Roll with the punches down the aisles and down the street. The weeks roll by. Roll by.
I think it's important to talk about what Tim was talking about and the picture that he was painting on this album and on other Whitlam's albums, because it had a particular impact on me. Tim wrote very personally, and that included references to Sydney and Sydney's Inner West, a hip place with many bands, music, share houses, record stores, and a university. You all know those kinds of neighborhoods I'm talking about, and I goddamn love those neighborhoods. Through the music of the Whitlams and other people, they told me that there was one in my city, just a few minutes down the train line. Many years later, I saw Tim play a show where everyone was asked to perform a classic Sydney cover. He got on and said, "That's not going to be a problem," and did a few of his classics. That the Whitlams wrote and sang so specifically about the city I lived in was a big deal. So many other bands do that for their cities, and I think it's a big deal for their fans as well. But it wasn't just the place. It was what happened in those places. Tim painted a picture of an inner-city world of share houses and colourful people. Characters with stories who lived in a local bar. Out-of-work musicians who were on the dole but had wisdom to spare. Tim himself dropped out of uni to play in bands. Walking home through inner-city streets with friends after a night out. Drinking and talking about life, music and girls. Broken hearts and unfinished books. Bands on every corner, and all the silliness that goes with that. Basically, Tim Friedman sold me this image of the inner city life in Australia in the 90s. Tim himself was 32 when this album came out, and a lot of the songs reflected on Tim's own life in his 20s. For me, it was irresistible. As a teenager, I was fascinated by the life and lifestyle that Tim painted. I loved those songs and wondered romantically if that's what my 20s would be like. I'd moved to Newtown not long after, and my life wasn't that far away from the songs on that album. There'd be massive nights and lonely nights. I'd hang out in the park outside the church that was on the album cover. More than the music, the Whitlams told me that there was a life that was an alternative to slowly dying in the suburbs. It wasn't about Sydney, but another single was the song Melbourne. Even that song described the life of a woman who was a painter and had a dog and who lived in hip Melbourne. I was an English as a second language kid who lived in an apartment. It was incredibly exotic and enticing. Here's Melbourne by the Whitlams.
She paints pictures on the wall. She eats all of the garden and has an aversion to conviction. She calls her dog the bear. In love with this girl, and with her town as well. Walking round the rainy city, what a pity there's things to do at home. Things to do at home.
Eternal Nightcap, the album, would spend months in the charts. The album would sell over 200,000 copies. But it happened slowly as more people heard about the album. The album was released on Tim's own label, Black Yak, with the help of Phantom Records, just like the other Whitlams albums. It was a small-time indie release that didn't come with a huge marketing budget. There wasn't even a film clip for Louis Burdett, and they only made one for No Aphrodisiac after it was a hit. It's surprising as Tim had plenty of handsome star power, and putting him on TV seemed to make sense. But that wasn't the initial ambition for the album. But the album took off anyway. No Aphrodisiac topped the Triple J Hottest 100 of 1997. You Sound Like Louis Burdett made it to number 53 in the same year. And three more songs from the album made it to the 1998 list, with Buy Now, Pay Later the top of the pile at number 37. These tender ballads about life in your 20s, written by this man in his 30s, were working for Australian teens. The band was hot property and they hit the road, capitalising on the success. They did 100 shows in 6 months. The band were used to that kind of schedule, but they were now doing it in bigger venues and with a crew and with songs on the radio. They had to pull ads for shows because they sold out straight away and the ads were a waste of money. It was an emotional and strange time for Tim. In a matter of months, he had gone from an indie inner-city pub musician to a multi-platinum star. They won ARIAs for Best Group, with the award presented to them by Gough Whitlam himself. But there were a few bumps on the road to success. The Whitlams, who were on their own label, could only do so much. And as great as their songs were, the late 90s were about guitar rock. The Whitlams' beautiful piano songs were not exactly the sound of commercial radio airwaves. They were famous and acclaimed, but they weren't all over the radio. There was a new single remix of No Aphrodisiac, It was 1 minute shorter and featured more distorted guitar, and it removed the great end part. But that was possibly a bit too rude for commercial radio anyway. The single only made it to number 59 in the singles chart. Here's just a snippet of the end of the radio version of No Aphrodisiac. A new version of Melbourne that starts with the chorus was also released. The hope was that starting with the hook might make it work a little bit better on radio, but it didn't, and the song peaked at number 70. The Whitlams just weren't, so far, a hit singles band. Eternal Nightcap was also a weird album overall. Amongst those wonderful songs, there was that cover of Bob Dylan's Tangled Up in Blue that was sung by Tim Hall, and another song which he sang and wrote. I liked those songs, but it distracted from the story being told, and that was that there was this major new star called Tim Friedman. The Whitlams signed a deal with Warner Music in Australia. They helped to secure a release of Eternal Nightcap in New Zealand and Canada. Both editions had different track listings. The lesser songs were removed, remixed versions of songs from Undeniably were added instead, including I Make Hamburgers. A vinyl version of Eternal Nightcap also removed some songs. There was a lot of second guessing and fiddling around. And then there was more tragedy around Tim. In January of 1998, 2 years after Stevie's death, and 1 year after topping the Hottest 100, a friend of Tim's was killed just meters from his home. Tim was quickly discounted as a suspect, and a man was eventually caught and imprisoned for the murder over a decade later. But it made Tim extremely private, and he shut down any tabloid and celebrity press. He would only put himself out there for music. Through all the success and madness, the Whitlams made a follow-up album, 1999's Love This City. Tim, with the support of Warner Music, was basically allowed to do whatever he wanted. In the whirlwind of success, Tim had not written many new songs, but like Eternal Nightcap, he wanted each song to be its own project. He also, once again, was without a band, so he put together different people for different tracks. Sessions started in Sydney, again with Rob Taylor. And then there were a few more songs written and recorded with producer Daniel Denham. Tim then went to Memphis to record a few more. Everything was recorded to tape. There were orchestras and dozens of session musicians. The album was recorded over 9 months and cost $200,000, 10 times the cost of Eternal Nightcap. The mastering alone cost more than Eternal Nightcap. It is, I'm pretty sure, the most expensive Australian alternative album of the 90s. Tim later reflected that he probably could have stopped months earlier. After all that work, the public were eager to hear what came next from the Whitlams. And what they gave them was the single Chunky Chunky Air Guitar. Here's Chunky Chunky Air Guitar by the Whitlams. She came from the Caucasus Islands with a limp and a snow shaker, huh? Hunt by a fine Arabian ginger monsignor. He said you ain't get nothing, cause nothing gets made by Koreans. Away, they were singing Chunky Chunky Air Guitar now. Chunky Chunky Air Guitar. Chunky Chunky Air Guitar now. Chunky Chunky Air Guitar. Chunky Chunky Air Guitar was a very odd choice for a first single. There's that heavy guitar, and it's all a bit of a novelty song with a jokey film clip. It wasn't exactly what the public were expecting from the Whitlams. They had fallen in love with Tim's emotional rawness, and now his voice was lost in a sea of distortion. I assume people hearing it casually would not even recognize that it was the Whitlams. It was, I can only assume, a bit of an indie entree. A single for Triple J, a smart-assy thing before going bigger with other singles on commercial radio. That was kind of a regular strategy in the mid-90s, and it might have been a good idea earlier in the decade. But by 1999, commercial radio was more powerful, and Chunky Chunky Air Guitar was quickly buried. In a way, nothing they picked could have really been indicative of the album because the album is so scattered. Recorded across so many different sessions and with so many different people, there was no through line. But having earned his platform, Tim was going to fucking use it. Love This City covered a lot of ground. There were political songs like 400 Miles from Darwin or Love This City itself. There were tender ballads to cry into your beer like God Drinks at the Sando or the album closer There Is No One. And there's big poppy romantic numbers like Make the World Safe and what probably should have been the first single and the eventual second single, Thank You for Loving Me at My Worst. Thank You seems to have every production trick with vocal effects, trumpets, strings and keyboard axes. This always happens after a band goes big. Because they're playing in bigger venues, they have to come back with bigger songs. That's why every band you've ever loved makes an overproduced album when they go big. Thank You sounds expensive, and there's still plenty of Tim's great story details and sweetness. It has a fun film clip made in Chinatown in Melbourne. Here's Thank You for Loving Me at My Worst by The Whitlams.
I shouldn't have driven. You shouldn't have driven. But we got there, had a good time, so we left the car. And the cabbie was from a war zone. We were glad he was driving us home. I was gladder of some movement. You took it on, you took it on board. I said, thank you. Thank you for loving me at my worst. If this isn't love, it's very close.
Love This City, the album, was a lot of things, but what it wasn't was Eternal Nightcap 2. And probably rightly so. Eternal Nightcap was a special moment in Tim's life that just couldn't be recreated. If anything, Tim was highly aware that he could sink like a one-hit wonder. So he decided to shoot for the moon, and at least he wouldn't be forgotten. The title track was another big swing. It was a reworking of an earlier B-side called the Sydney 2000 Olympic Theme. It was a character study about someone struggling on the streets of Sydney and how that contrasted with the huge celebration of the impending Olympic Games. Here's Sydney 2000 Olympics Theme by The Whitlams, first released in 1996.
No head for breakfast. The car wouldn't stop. The train was really full. No, he didn't want to work. The houses all the same. Now here's the rain, not falling, it's collapsing at his feet. Deep breath in Bundy's arm, wet raincoat on his arm. He wishes the hours.
For the eventual album version, Tim adds the big chorus hook. He also throws legendary singer Marsha Hines on it, and she makes the hook as big as possible. The arrangement is all cleaned up and Tim's vocal and story take center stage. Played straighter than the original, it makes it even more uncomfortable when the song's hero commits suicide in the end. It was released a year before the 2000 Olympics, and it was used for many video montages about Sydney. It was later licensed, unironically, in many ad campaigns. The success of Eternal Nightcap allowed Tim to make these multifaceted, bizarre songs. Here's Love This City by The Whitlams.
You gotta love this city, love this city. You gotta love this city. You gotta love this city, love this city. You gotta love it, love it.
He's too sick for breakfast. The car wouldn't start. The train was really full. And his girlfriend had a boyfriend. Is all the same. Now here's the rain, not falling, but collapsing at his feet. A deep breath and he clocks on. Raincoat on his arm. He wishes the hours would disappear. But the trip's in vain, cause awaiting him, a layoff notice and his severance pay. He shuffles back to the train again. You gotta love this city.
You gotta love this city. Love this city. You gotta love this city. city, you gotta love it, love it.
Love This City, the album, charted at number 3 in the ARIA album charts, which was a really good result. Triple J played both Chunky Chunky Air Guitar and Thank You, and they both made the 1999's Hottest 100. In a quirk of the Hottest 100, Thank You was released on the album in 1999, but then also released as a single in 2000, so it made the Hottest 100 twice. Thank You, though, only charted at number 63 in the ARIA singles chart. But the next single would be the biggest hit of their career. And once again, it would be music that reflected real-life tragedy. Andy Lewis had spent the 90s after leaving the Whitlams in The Gadflies. And that band was seeing some success by being the house band on the ABC TV show Good News Week. But privately, he was struggling with a gambling addiction, and it consumed his life. In February of 2000, in just his mid-30s, Andy Lewis took his own life. Blow Up the Pokies had already been picked as a single before Andy died. Tim was unsure if Andy ever heard the song. They had not really spoken in a while. Blow Up the Pokies is a rewrite of a song by Greta Gertler, who also co-wrote Charlie No. 3, but the lyrics were all about Andy and his struggles. The pokies in the songs are poker machines, these gambling machines in pubs. Various restrictions on these gambling machines were lifted at a state level in the 90s. New South Wales legalised poker machines for hotels in 1997. These are devastatingly bad things. They destroy lives. In the late 90s in Sydney, several hotels stopped live music and got pokies instead. But that's nothing compared to how much money these cold machines take from people. Ask any of your mates who gets a new job at a pub. They're always shocked by just how many hundreds of thousands of dollars just one of these machines brings in. And all that money comes from real people. And here's a fun fact. Australia has more poker machines per capita than any other fucking country in the world. And that includes the fact that Western Australia has banned them. And many other countries seem to do fine without them. Maybe RSL clubs, who always cry that jobs will be lost if we took away their poor fucking pokies, need to think up a business model that doesn't prey on people. But back to the song. Blow Up the Pokies' big chorus, bolstered by that big string section and the interesting subject matter, helped make the song a commercial radio hit. And it made number 21 in the ARIA singles chart, a career best. Here's Blow Up the Pokies by the Whitlams.
There was the stage, two red lights and a dodgy PA. You trod the planks way back then. And it's strange that you're here again, here again. And I wish I knew the right words to make you feel better. Walk out of this place and defeat them in your secret battle. Show them you can be your own man again.
After Andy's death, Tim wrote a song called The Curse Stops Here. It was written, like Eternal Nightcap, in the middle of grief. It was a defiant song. Two of the three original members of the Whitlams had died, but the tragedy ends with Tim. Originally released as a B-side on the Pokies single, it was also included as the closing track on their 2006 album, Little Cloud. Here's the Whitlams, but it's really just Tim, with The Curse Stops Here.
Stevie left on a Friday too. They made the easy way look hard. We never thought too much about letting go. They took it all too far again. My first days back and I was rolling round the town saying, stay away from edges and from ropes if you can. 'Cause I am the last one. And the curse stops here.
The album Love This City is wild and weird. It's too long and bolstered for no reason by a Bernie Hayes song and a Chris Abraham song. Those songs are lovely, but by now it was the Tim Friedman show and his stories were what people wanted to hear. Love This City was expensive to make, but it did well enough. The Whitlams toured for years on the back of it. Most importantly, it solidified the Whitlams as more than just Eternal Nightcap. The question that Love This City implied was, what even is the Whitlams? Were they the good time bar band of Louis Burdett and I Make Hamburgers, who were the soundtrack of A Good Night Out? Or were they a love songs band for pop radio? Or were they a band that was about a star and it's really just about Tim Friedman? It's hard to say, and it's probably a mix of all three. But what Tim did work out during the whole Love This City period was a steady lineup. The touring band would become the first steady lineup of the Whitlams for many years. They included Terrapine Richmond on drums, Warwick Hornby on bass, and they were joined by Jack Housden, who had been in the Bad Loves. That lineup would be the Whitlams for more than two decades after this. The first album made by this more stable lineup was 2002's Torch the Moon. It is a lovely pop album, and not as weird as Love This City. And as much as I like it, it also makes me appreciate the wild swings of Love This City. There's nothing as odd and arresting as chunky, chunky air guitar, or as angry as Pokies or Love This City on Torch the Moon. Torch the Moon is probably a better album, even if the making of it lacked drama. Instead, Torch the Moon solidified what the Whitlams did best. And it was more intimate and gentle, with lots of sweetly romantic personal songs. The album included a song that the band wrote for the TV series Love is a Four-Letter Word, called Duffy's Song. It's another fine character study in a career full of fine character studies. This time, it was just a fictional character from TV. It made number 42 in the Hottest 100 of 2001. Here's Duffy's Song, open parentheses, I Will Not Go Quietly, close parentheses, by the Whitlams.
I will not go quietly, I will not accept your rules. Gonna live with myself, for I live with any of you. For I was the best, you all knew it, on the days I cared at all. You can all say I blew it, you'll be talking about me for years.
But my favourite song on the album is probably Best Work. It sounds like a big 70s power ballad, complete with big drum fills and a killer guitar solo by Jack. I like that the song is pretty much Tim saying that he writes songs about other people. It sounds nothing like Eternal Nightcap, but it really shows off what this lineup of the Whitlams can do. Here's Best Work by the Whitlams. The curse did indeed stop. The Whitlams stabilised. They did one more album for Warners, 2006's Little Cloud, and continued to play on and off in the decades that followed. Tim did shows with orchestras, a Harry Nilsson tribute, and in recent years added a country flavour to his catalogue with a band called the Whitlams Black Stump Band. And then 16 years later, after the last Whitlams album, a follow-up album in 2022 called Sancho. It featured the lovely, cheeky You Make Me Feel Like I'm 50 Again. Here's You Make Me Feel Like I'm 50 Again by the Whitlams. The Whitlam story is so full of tragedy, it's incredible that they survived it all. And the reason is the songs. The songs were so good that decades later, people still want to hear the Charlie songs and No Aphrodisiac. I often think about Stevie. I have drank many times in the pub where he had his last drink, the Town Hall Hotel in Newtown, and I've often looked over at the train tracks from out that pub's window and thought about Stevie deciding to take a train ride. I think about mental health, depression, sadness, and suicide. There was a lot of it in these bands, and the people in these 90s bands. We didn't really talk about mental health in the 90s. There are incredible highs involved in playing in bands, but there wasn't enough support for the lows. I've been lucky to meet many musicians from all levels, some who were big, medium, and small. And some of the ones from the 90s, I can still see some trauma decades later. There's better support than ever before, but it is still not enough. Stevie and Andy are just two casualties and two of too many in this scene. I did a count and I talk about really 100 bands. And if you average it out to maybe 5 members per band, around 20 of them have died before reaching 50. If this was any other industry and the death rate was 4% of people before they reach 50, there would be a national emergency. I think the Jimi Hendrixes of the world actually make us regard musicians' lives as not as important as anyone else's. And that's bullshit. There's still so much more we can do to support the people who are still alive and to celebrate the legacies of the people when they go. But back to the Whitlams. The place to start really is Eternal Nightcap. With no Eternal Nightcap, we wouldn't be talking about the Whitlams at all. It was just a special moment in the life of a very good songwriter. It's a masterpiece. And that's not a word that I've used before on this podcast. It is still one of my favourite albums of the era, or of any era. I guess I'm now the older man looking back in my 20s too. And then with Love This City, they basically muscled their way into having a long-term career. Here's an album so big that it couldn't be ignored. And then Tim and the band have been capturing Australian stories ever since. Undeniably and Torch the Moon have lots of great music too. I'd love to see vinyl reissues of those last two. There was a Greatest Hits collection released at the end of their Warner tenure. It features tracks from the early days like Goff, up to music from 2008 when it came out. It was called Truth, Beauty and a Picture of You. And it's an incredible collection. But perhaps Eternal Nightcap is still the best place to start. I'll say my usual piece about how odd it is that there isn't a documentary. But I guess a lot of it depends on Tim, and if he wants to open it all up again. There will always be these weird characters on the margins, and people living in their messy 20s and beyond. There'll always be fucked up friends and loneliness and Bob Dylan. And no matter how personal it gets, it's universal. To end, some music. I think 2001's Torch the Moon is underrated, and here's another one of my favourite songs from it. It was released as a single and they still play it live. Here's The Whitlams with Royal in the Afternoon.
Won't drink, won't smoke, won't get home at 100 o'clock. Nobody's gonna satisfy me except you and the baby in the colour TV. Was always in my prime, now falling over the line. Boy, it's a sad day after letting me go. You got it all to get me home. You quiet me down, been all over the place and I ain't found anyone. Keep my feet on the ground, oh. Can't be bigger than my old habits over my dead body, but still, if I am awake in the morning with the Royal in the afternoon.
Okay, welcome to the end bit, and this week, it's just wrapping up the season. Thanks to everyone who has supported me in any way at all, whether it was through the Patreon, the tipping service Buy Me a Coffee, buying one of those new books, or buying some merch like a t-shirt or a tote bag, or all those no-cost ways like leaving me a review on Apple Podcasts or on Amazon if you bought a book. I can see lots of reviews this season. Or following me on social media or sharing one of the social media posts. Again, I can see lots of you have done that, and thank you. And telling a friend. The podcast numbers are growing every season, so someone must be telling someone. So I take a break and back later in the year to wrap up the decade and maybe even a little bit beyond. And that's it. That's the whole story I wanted to tell. In the meantime, go check out the book. Consider supporting me on Patreon. There's a tipping service called Buy Me a Coffee. Check out the merch on Redbubble. Leave me a review on Apple Podcasts or go to Amazon if you bought a book. Or follow me on social media. Share my social media posts or simply, importantly, tell a friend. Links to the socials, the YouTube, the website and everything is in the description. And that's it. There's no next week. Next time, we will be back to Season 4 and the end of the 90s, but we'll start with the 1997 episode.